"Hey, gangster." He opened his eyes. Kath stood beside him in a black shift. "Bought this." She ran her palm across the fabric curve of the pelvic girdle. He saw the blue derm on her wrist. "Like it?" "Sure." He automatically scanned the faces around them, then looked back at her. "What do you think you're up to, honey?" "You like the beta you got off us, Lupus?" She was quivering, vibrating invisibly with the fret buzz. "You get off?" "Yeah," he said, "but the come down's a bitch." "Then you need another one," she said. "And what's that supposed to lead to?" She took his hand between hers. Her palms were hot and dry. "You're Yak, aren't you, Lupus? Gaijin soldier man for the Yakuza. You got an eye, huh?" he said. He withdrew his hand and fumbled for a cigarette. "How come you got all your fingers then?" she asked. "I thought you had to chop one off every time you screwed up." "I never screw up." He lit his cigarette. "I saw that girl you're with day I met you. Walks like Hideo. Scares me." "I like that." "She like it with girls?" "Never said," Case said. "Who's Hideo?" "Three Danes. What you calls it, retainer. Family retainer." Case forced himself to stare dully at the emergency crowd while he spoke. "D Jane?" "Lady Three Jane," she said. "She's Triff. Rich. Her father owns all of this." "This bar?" "Freeside," she said. "No shit," Case said. "You keeping some class company, huh?" He raised an eyebrow, put his arm around her, his hand on her hip. "So how you meet these aristos, Kathy? You some kind of closet deb?" "Oh, you know," she said. "She likes to party. It gets real boring for her in there. Her old man lets her out sometimes, as long as she brings Hideo to take care of." "Where does it get boring?" he asked. "Straylight, they call it. She told me, oh, it's pretty, all the pools and lilies. It's a castle, a real castle, all stone and sunsets." She snuggled in against him. "Hey, Lupus man, you need a derm so we can be together." She wore a tiny leather purse on a slender neck thong. Her nails were bright pink against her boosted tan, bitten to the quick. She opened the purse and withdrew a paper-backed bubble with a blue derm inside. Case watched as she tore the bubble away, peeled the derm from its backing, and smoothed it across his inner wrist. "Three Jane, she got a pointy face, nose like a bird?" he asked. He watched his hands fumble an outline. "Dark hair, young?" "I guess," she said, "but she's Triff, you know, like all that money." The drug hit him like an express train, a white-hot column of light mounting his spine from the region of his prostate, illuminating the sutures of his skull with X-rays of short-circuited sexual energy. His teeth sang in their individual sockets like tuning forks, each one pitch-perfect and clear as ethanol. His bones beneath the hazy envelope of flesh were chromed and polished, the joints lubricated with a film of silicone. Sandstorms raged across the scoured floor of his skull, generating waves of high, thin static that broke behind his eyes, spheres of purest crystal expanding. "Come on," she said, taking his hand. "You got it now. We got it. Up the hill. We'll have it all night." The anger was expanding, relentless, exponential, riding out behind the beta-phenylethylamine rush like a carrier wave, a seismic fluid, rich and corrosive. She dropped her hand and stumbled for the door, shoving someone out of the way. "Fuck you," she screamed behind him, "you rip-off shit." He couldn't feel his legs. He used them like stilts, swaying crazily across the flagstone pavement of Jules Verne, a distant rumbling in his ears, his own blood, razored sheets of light bisecting his skull at a dozen angles. And then he was frozen, erect, fists tight against his thighs, head back, his lips curled, shaking, while he watched the loser zodiac of Freeside, the nightclub constellations of the hologram sky, shift, sliding fluid down the axis of darkness to swarm like live things at the dead center of reality. Until they had arranged themselves individually and in their hundreds to form a vast, simple portrait, stippled the ultimate monochrome stars against night sky, face of Miss Linda Lee. When he was able to look away to lower his eyes, he found every other face in the street upraised, the strolling tourists becalmed with wonder, And when the lights in the sky went out, a ragged cheer went up from Jules Verne to echo off the terraces and ranked balconies of lunar concrete. Somewhere a clock began to chime, some ancient bell out of Europe. Midnight. He walked till morning. The high wore away, the chrome skeleton corroding hourly, flesh growing solid, the drug flesh replaced with the meat of his life. He couldn't think. He liked that very much, to be conscious and able to think. The rooftop meadow of the Intercontinental was stirring as he crossed it, an early breakfast crowd intent on coffee and croissants beneath the striped umbrellas. He still had his anger. That was like being rolled in some alley and waking to discover your wallet still in your pocket, untouched. He wore with it, unable to give it a name or an object. He rode the elevator down to his level, fumbling in his pocket for the Freeside credit chip that served as his key. Sleep was becoming real, was something he might do, to lie down on the sand-colored temper foam and find the blankness again. They were waiting there, the three of them, their perfect white sports clothes and stenciled tans setting off the hand-woven organic chic of the furniture. The girl sat on a wicker sofa, an automatic pistol beside her on the leaf-patterned print of the cushion. "Touring," she said, "you are under arrest." Part 4, The Straylight Run. "Your name is Henry Dorset Case." She recited the year and place of his birth, his Bama single identification number, and a string of names he gradually recognized as aliases from his past. "You've been here a while?" He saw the contents of his bag spread out across the bed, unwashed clothing sorted by type. The shuriken lay by itself between jeans and underwear on the sand-tinted temper foam. "Where's Kolodny?" The two men sat side by side on the couch, their arms crossed over tanned chests, identical gold chains slung around their necks. Case peered at them and saw that their youth was counterfeit, marked by a certain telltale corrugation at the knuckles, something the surgeons were unable to erase. "Who's Kolodny?" she said. "That was the name in the register. Where is she?" "I don't know," he said, crossing to the bar and pouring himself a glass of mineral water. "She took off." "Where did you go tonight, Case?" The girl picked up the pistol and rested it on her thigh without actually pointing it at him. "Jules Verne, couple of bars," he said. "Got high. How about you?" His knees felt brittle. The mineral water was warm and flat. "I don't think you grasp your situation," said the man on the left, taking a pack of Jetons from the breast pocket of his white mesh blouse. "You are busted, Mr. Case. The charges have to do with conspiracy to augment an artificial intelligence." He took a gold Dunhill from the same pocket and cradled it in his palm. "The man you call Armitage is already in custody." "Quarto?" Case asked. The man's eyes widened. "Yes. How do you know that that is his name?" A millimeter of flame clicked from the lighter. "I forget," Case said. "You'll remember," the girl said. Their names, or work names, were Michelle, Roland, and Pierre. Knowing that he couldn't follow their French, they spoke freely among themselves, or seemed to. He caught enough as it was. Names like Pauly, Armitage, Cincinnat, Panther Moderns protruding like icebergs from an animated sea of Parisian French. But it was entirely possible that the names were there for his benefit. They always referred to Molly as Kolodny. "You say you were hired to make a run, Case," Roland said, his slow speech intended to convey reasonableness, "and that you were unaware of the nature of the target. Is this not unusual in your trade? Having penetrated the defenses, would you not be unable then to perform the required operation? And surely an operation of some kind is required, yes?" "Look," he said, "I'm sick. Had this god-awful drug in a bar, you know. I want to lie down. You got me already. You say you got Armitage. You got him? Go ask him. I'm just a hired help." Roland nodded. "And Kolodny? She was with Armitage when he hired me. Just muscle, a razor girl. Far as I know, which isn't too far." "We know how you were repaired at Sheba," Michelle said, "and that may have been Wintermute's first mistake." Kate stared at her as blankly as he could. The name hadn't been mentioned before. The process employed on you resulted in the clinic owner applying for 7 basic patents. Do you know what that means? No, he said. It means that the operator of a black clinic in Chiba City now owns a controlling interest in 3 major medical research consortiums. This reverses the usual order of things, you see. It attracted attention. She crossed her brown arms across her small, high breasts and settled back against the print cushion. Traced you to the sprawl, lost you again, she said, then caught up with you as you were leaving for Istanbul. We backtracked, traced you through the grid, determined that you'd instigated a riot at SenseNet. SenseNet was eager to cooperate. They ran an inventory for us. They discovered that McCoy Pauly's ROM personality construct was missing. In Istanbul, Roland said almost apologetically, it was very easy. The woman had alienated Armitage's contact with the secret police. And then you came here, Pierre said, slipping the binoculars into his shorts pocket. We were delighted. Chance to work on your tan? Case asked. You know what we mean, Michelle said. If you wish to pretend that you do not, you only make things more difficult for yourself. There is still the matter of extradition. You will return with us, Case, as will Armitage. But where exactly will we all be going? To Switzerland, where you will be merely a pawn in the trial of an artificial intelligence? Or to Libama, where you can be proven to have participated not only in data invasion and larceny, but in an act of public mischief which cost 14 innocent lives? The choice is yours. Case took a Yaheyuan from his pack. Pierre lit it for him with a gold Dunhill. Would Armitage protect you? Pierre asked. The question was punctuated by the lighter's bright jaws snapping shut. One thing, he said, and drew on his cigarette. He blew the smoke up at the touring registry agent. Do you guys have any real jurisdiction out here? I mean, shouldn't you have the Freeside security team in on this party? He saw the dark eyes harden and the lean boy face intense for the blow, but Pierre only shrugged. It doesn't matter, Roland said. You will come with us. We are at home with situations of legal ambiguity. The treaties under which our arm of the registry operates grant us a great deal of flexibility, and we create flexibility in situations where it is required. You are worse than a fool, Michelle said, getting to her feet, the pistol in her hand. You have no care for your species. For thousands of years, men dreamed of pacts with demons. Only now are such things possible. And what would you be paid with? What would your price be for aiding this thing to free itself and grow? There was a knowing weariness in her young voice that no 19-year-old could have mustered. You will dress now. You will come with us. Otherwise, we kill you. Now. She raised the pistol, a smooth black Walther with an integral silencer. I'm dressing already, he said, stumbling toward the bed. His legs were still numb, clumsy. He fumbled with a clean T-shirt. We have a ship standing by, she said. We'll erase Pauly's construct with a pulse weapon. SenseNet'll be pissed, Case said, thinking, and all the evidence in the Hosaka. They are in some difficulty already for having owned such a thing. Case pulled the shirt over his head. He saw the shuriken on the bed, lifeless metal, his star. He felt for the anger. It was gone. Time to give in, to roll with it. He thought of the toxin sacks. Here comes the meat, he muttered. In the elevator to the meadow, he thought of Molly. She might already be Straylight, hunting Riviera, hunted probably by Hideo, who was almost certainly the ninja clone of the Finn's story, the one who'd come to retrieve the talking head. He rested his forehead against the matte black plastic of a wall panel and closed his eyes. His limbs were wood, old, warped, and heavy with rain. Lunch was being served beneath the trees, under the bright umbrellas. Roland and Michelle fell into character, chattering brightly in French. Pierre came behind. Michelle kept the muzzle of her pistol close to his ribs, concealing the gun with a white duck jacket she draped over her arm. Crossing the meadow, weaving between the tables and the trees, he wondered if she would shoot him if he collapsed now. Black fur boiled at the borders of his vision. He glanced up at the hot white band of the Lotto Atchison armature and saw a giant butterfly banking gracefully against recorded sky. At the edge of the meadow they came to a railing cliffside. wildflowers dancing in the updraft from the canyon that was Desiderata. They followed the railing to an ornate iron bridge that arched over Desiderata. Michelle prodded him with the muzzle of the Walther. "Take it easy," he said. "I can't hardly walk today." They were a little over a quarter of the way across when the microlight struck, its electric engine silent until the carbon fiber prop chopped away the top of Pierre's skull. They were in the thing's shadow for an instant. Case felt the hot blood spray across the back of his neck, and then someone tripped him. He rolled, seeing Michelle on her back, knees up, aiming the Walther with both hands. That's a waste of effort, he thought, with the strange lucidity of shock. She was trying to shoot down the microlight. And then he was running. He looked back as he passed the first of the trees. Roland was running after him. He saw the fragile biplane strike the iron railing of the bridge, crumple, cartwheel, sweeping the girl with it down into Desiderata. Roland hadn't looked back. His face was fixed, white, his teeth bared. He had something in his hand. The gardening robot took Roland as he passed that same tree. It fell straight out of the groomed branches, a thing like a crab, diagonally striped with black and yellow. "You killed him," Case panted, running. "Crazy motherfucker. You killed them all." The little train shot through its 20 kilometers per hour. Gravity fell away as the spindle narrowed. Case's stomach churned. Errol was waiting with his scooter beside the dock. "Case, man, big problem." The soft voice faint in his phones. He chinned the volume control and peered into the Lexan faceplate of Errol's helmet. "Gotta get to Garvey, Errol." "Yo, strap in, man. But Garvey captive. Yacht. Came before, she come back. Now she locking steady on Marcus Garvey." "Touring?" Case wondered. "Came before." Case climbed into the scooter's frame and began to fasten the straps. "Japan yacht," Errol said. "Brought you package." Armitage, Case thought. Confused images of wasps and spiders rose in Case's mind as they came in sight of Marcus Garvey. The little tug was snug against the gray thorax of a sleek, insectile ship five times her length. The arms of grapplers stood out against Garvey's patched hull, with the strange clarity of vacuum and raw sunlight. A pay corrugated gangway curved out of the yacht, snaked sideways to avoid the tug's engines, and covered the aft hatch. Malcolm was purring a speeded-up patois into his radio when Case came through the forward lock and removed his helmet. "Errol's gone back to the rocker," Case said. Malcolm nodded, still whispering to the microphone. Case pulled himself over the pilot's drifting tangle of dreadlocks and began to remove his suit. Malcolm's eyes were closed now. He nodded as he listened to some reply over a pair of phones with bright orange pads. His brow creased with concentration. Case snapped the red Sanyo suit to a storage hammock and pulled himself down to the G-web. "See what the ghosts say, man," Malcolm said. "Computer keep asking for you." "So who's up there in that thing?" Case asked. "Same Japan boy came before, and now he joined by you, Mr. Armitage. Come out freeside." Case put the trodes on and jacked in. "Dixie, what you getting up to, boy? I've been hearing lurid stories. Hosaka's patched into a twin bank on your boss's boat now. Really hopping. You pull some touring heat?" "Yeah, but Wintermute killed him." "Well, that won't hold them all that long. Plenty more where those came from. Be up here in force. Bet their decks are all over this grid sector like flies on shit. And your boss, Case, he says go. He says run it now." Case punched for the freeside coordinates. "Let me take that a second, Case." The matrix blurred and phased as the flatline executed an intricate series of jumps with a speed and accuracy that made Case wince with envy. "Shit, Dixie. Hey, boy, I was that good when I was alive. You ain't seen nothing. No hands." "That's it, huh? Big green rectangle off left? You got it. Corporate core data for Tessier Ashpool SA, and that ice is generated by their two friendly AIs. One on par with anything in the military sector, looks to me. That's King Hell Ice, Case. Black as the grave and slick as glass. Fry your brain soon as look at you." "This isn't looking so hot, is it, Dixie? I mean, the Tourings are on it. I was thinking maybe we should try to bail. I can take you. Yeah, no shit. You don't want to see what that Chinese program can do? Well, Case stared at the green walls of the TA ice. Well, screw it. Yeah, let's run. Slot it, Dixie said. He slotted the Chinese virus, paused, then drove it home. Okay, he said. We're on. Listen, Malcolm, if it gets really funny, you can grab my left wrist. I'll feel it. Otherwise, I guess you do what the Hosaka tells you, okay? Sure, man. Malcolm lit a fresh joint. Case jacked back in. Christ on a crutch, the flatline said. Take a look at that. The Chinese virus was unfolding around them. Polychrome shadow, countless translucent layers shifting and recombining. Protean, enormous, it towered above them, blotting out the void. Big mother, the flatline said. I'm gonna check Molly, Case said, tapping the SimStim switch. Free fall. The sensation was like diving through perfectly clear water. She was falling, rising through a wide tube of fluted lunar concrete, lit at 2-meter intervals by rings of white neon. The link was one way. He couldn't talk to her. He flipped. Boy, that is one mean piece of software. Hottest thing since sliced bread. That goddamn thing's invisible. I just now rented 20 seconds on that little pink box, 4 jumps left of the TA ice, had a look at what we look like. We don't, man. We're not there. Case searched the matrix around the Tessier Ashby license. We found the pink structure, a standard commercial unit, and punched in closer to it. Maybe it's defective, he said. Maybe, but I doubt it. It just doesn't register. If it did, we'd read it as some kind of Chinese sneak attack. But nobody's twigged us at all. Maybe not even the folks in Straylight. Case watched the blank wall that screened Straylight. Well, he said, that's an advantage, right? Maybe. The construct approximated laughter. Case winced at the sensation. I checked old Quang 11 out again for you, boy. It's real friendly, long as you're on the trigger end. Just polite and helpful as can be. Speaks good English, too. You ever hear of a slow virus before? No, Case said. I did once. Just an idea back then. But that's what old Quang's all about. This ain't bore and inject. It's more like we interface with the ice so slow, the ice doesn't feel it. The face of the Quang logic kind of sleazes up to the target and mutates, so it gets to be exactly like the ice fabric. The flatline laughed. Wish you weren't so damn jolly today, man. That laugh of yours sort of gets me in the spine. Too bad, the flatline said. Old dead man needs his laughs. Case slapped the SimStim switch and crashed through tangled metal and the smell of dust, the heels of his hands skidding as they struck slick paper. Something behind him collapsed noisily. Come on, said the Finn. Ease up a little. Case lay sprawled across a pile of yellowing magazines, the girl shining up at him in the dimness of Metro holographics, a wistful galaxy of sweet white teeth. He lay there until his heart had slowed, breathing the smell of old magazines. Wintermute, he said. Yeah, said the Finn somewhere behind him. You got it. Fuck off, Case said. He sat up, rubbing his wrists. Come on, said the Finn, stepping out of a sort of alcove in the wall of junk. This way's better for you, man. He took his Partagas from a coat pocket and lit one. The smell of Cuban tobacco filled the shop. You want I should come to you in the Matrix like a burning bush? You aren't missing anything back there. An hour here will only take you a couple of seconds. You ever think maybe it gets on my nerves, you coming on like people I know? Case asked. He stood, swatting pale dust from the front of his black jeans. He turned, glaring back at the dusty shop windows, the closed door to the street. What's out there, New York, or does it just stop? Well, said the Finn, it's like that tree, you know. Falls in the woods, but maybe there's nobody to hear it. He showed Case his huge front teeth and puffed his cigarette. You can go for a walk, you wanna. It's all there, or anyway, all the parts of it you ever saw. This is memory, right? I tap you, sort it out, feed it back in. I don't have this good a memory, Case said, looking around. Everybody does, the Finn said, dropping his cigarette and grinding it out under his heel. But not many of you can access it. Memory's holographic for you. The Finn tugged at one of his small ears. I'm different. How do you mean, holographic? The holographic paradigm is the closest thing you've ever worked out to a representation of human memory, is all. But you've never done anything about it. People, I mean. The Finn stepped forward and canted his streamlined skull to peer up at Case. Maybe if you had, I wouldn't be happening. What's that supposed to mean? The Finn shrugged. His tattered tweed was too wide across the shoulders and didn't quite settle back into position.
I'm trying to help you, Case.
Why?
Because I need you, and because you need me.
Bullshit, Case said. Can you read my mind, Finn? He grimaced. Wintermute, I mean.
Minds aren't red. See? You've still got the paradigm's print gave you, and you're barely print literate. I can access your memory, but that's not the same as your mind.
He reached into the exposed chassis of an ancient television and withdrew a silver-black vacuum tube.
See this? Part of my DNA, sort of.
He tossed the thing into the shadows and Case heard it pop and tinkle.
You're always building models, stone circles, cathedrals, pipe organs, adding machines. I got no idea why I'm here now, you know that, but if the run goes off tonight, you'll have finally managed the real thing.
I don't know what you're talking about.
That's you and the collective, the Finn said, your species.
You killed those Turings, Case said.
The Finn shrugged. Hella, you should give a shit. They would have offed you and never thought twice. Anyway, why I got you here, we gotta talk more.
Listen, Case said, stepping forward. They never did shit to me. You're different. But he couldn't feel the anger.
So T.A., they made me, the Finn said. The French girl, she said you were selling out the species. Demon, she said I was,
the Finn grinned.
It doesn't much matter. You gotta hate somebody before this is over.
He turned and headed for the back of the shop.
Well, come on, I'll show you a little bit of stray light while I got you here.
He lifted the corner of the blanket. White light poured out.
Okay, said the Finn and grabbed his elbow.
They were drawn past the stale wool, puff of dust, into free fall in a cylindrical corridor of fluted lunar concrete, ringed with white neon at 2-meter intervals.
Jesus, Case said, tumbling. This is the front entrance, the Finn said, his tweed flapping.
Hold on, the Finn said. I'll fast-forward us. The walls blurred, dizzying sensation of headlong movement, colors whipping around corners and through narrow corridors. They seemed all at once to pass through several meters of solid wall, a flash of pitch darkness.
Here, the Finn said. This is it.
They floated in the center of a perfectly square room, walls and ceiling paneled in rectangular sections of dark wood. The floor was covered by a single square of brilliant carpet patterned after a microchip, circuits traced in blue and scarlet wool. In the exact center of the room, aligned precisely with the carpet pattern, stood a square pedestal of frosted white glass. The Villa Straylight, said a jeweled thing on the pedestal in a voice like music, is a body grown in upon itself. A gothic folly. Each space in Straylight is in some way secret, this endless series of chambers linked by passages, by stairwells vaulted like intestines, where the eye is trapped in narrow curves, carried past ornate screens, empty alcoves.
Essay of Three Janes, the Finn said, producing his Partagas, wrote that when she was 12, semiotics course.
The architects of Freeside went to great pains to conceal the fact that the interior of the spindle is arranged with the banal precision of furniture in a hotel room. In Straylight, the hull's inner surface is overgrown with a desperate proliferation of structures, forms flowing, interlocking, rising toward a solid core of microcircuitry, our clan's corporate heart. A cylinder of silicon wormholed with narrow maintenance tunnels, some no wider than a man's hand. The bright crabs burrow there, the drones, alert for micromechanical decay or sabotage.
That was her you saw in the restaurant, the Finn said.
By the standards of the archipelago, the head continued, ours is an old family, the convolutions of our home reflecting that age, but reflecting something else as well. The semiotics of the villa bespeak a turning in, a denial of the bright void beyond the hull. Tessier and Ashpool climbed the well of gravity,
to discover that they loathed space. They built Freeside to tap the wealth of the new islands, grew rich and eccentric, and began the construction of an extended body in Straylight. We have sealed ourselves away behind our money, growing inward, generating a seamless universe of self. The Villa Straylight knows no sky, recorded or otherwise. At the Villa's silicon core is a small room, the only rectilinear chamber in the complex. Here, on a plain pedestal of glass, rests an ornate bust, platinum and cloisonné, studded with lapis and pearl. The bright marbles of its eyes were cut from the synthetic ruby viewport of the ship that brought the first Tessier up the well and returned for the first Ashpool.
The head fell silent. "Well," Case asked finally, almost expecting the thing to answer him.
"That's all she wrote," the Finn said. "Didn't finish it. Just a kid then. This thing's a ceremonial terminal, sort of. I need Molly in here with the right word at the right time. That's the catch. Doesn't mean shit how deep you in the flatline ride that Chinese virus if this thing doesn't hear the magic word."
"So what's the word?" Case asked.
"I don't know," the Finn said. "You might say that what I am is basically defined by the fact that I don't know, because I can't know. I am that which knoweth not the word. If you knew, man, and told me, I couldn't know. It's hardwired in. Someone else has to learn it and bring it here, just when you and the flatline punch through that ice and scramble the cores."
"What happens then?" Case asked.
"I don't exist after that. I cease," said the Finn.
"Okay by me," Case said.
"Sure," the Finn said, "but you watch your ass. My, other lobe is onto us, it looks like. One burning bush looks pretty much like another. And Armitage is starting to go."
"What's that mean?" But the paneled room folded itself through a dozen impossible angles, tumbling away into cyberspace like an origami crane.
"You trying to break my record, son?"
the flatline asked.
"You were brain dead again. 5 seconds.
"Sit tight," Case said, and hit the sim-stim switch. She crouched in darkness, her palms against rough concrete. "Case, Case, Case, Case." The digital display pulsed his name in alphanumerics, Wintermute informing her of the link. "Cute," she said. She rocked back on her knees and rubbed her palms together, cracked her knuckles. "What kept you?" "Time, Molly, time now." She pressed her tongue hard against her lower front teeth. One moved slightly, activating her microchannel amps. The random bounce of photons through the darkness was converted to a pulse of electrons, the concrete around her coming up ghost pale and grainy. "Okay, honey," she said. "Now we go out to play." Her hiding place proved to be a service tunnel of some kind. She crawled out through a hinged, ornate grill of tarnished brass. He saw enough of her arms and hands to know that she wore the polycarbon suit again. Under the plastic, he felt the familiar tension of thin, tight leather. There was something slung under her arm in a harness or holster. She stood up, unzipped the suit, and touched the checkered plastic of a pistol grip. "Hey, Case," she said, barely voicing the words. "You listening? Tell you a story. Had me this boy once. You kind of remind me." She turned and surveyed the corridor. "Johnny, his name was." The low vaulted hallway was lined with dozens of museum cases, archaic-looking glass-fronted boxes made of brown wood. They looked awkward there against the organic curves of the hallway's walls, as though they'd been brought in and set up in a line for some forgotten purpose. Dull brass fixtures held globes of white light at tender intervals. The floor was uneven, and as she set off along the corridor, Case realized that hundreds of small rugs and carpets had been put down at random. In some places they were 6 deep, the floor a soft patchwork of hand-woven wool. "My Johnny, see, he was smart, real flash boy, started out as a stash on memory lane, chips in his head and people paid to hide data there. Had the yuck after him night I met him, and I did for their assassin. More luck than anything else, but I did for him. And after that, it was tight and sweet, Case." Her lips barely moved. He felt her form the words. He didn't need to hear them spoken aloud. We had a setup with a squid so we could read the traces of everything he'd ever stored. Ran it all out on tape and started twisting selected clients, ex-clients. I was Bagman, Muscle, Watchdog. I was real happy. You ever been happy, Case? He was my boy. We worked together, partners. I was maybe 8 weeks out of the puppet house when I met him. She paused, edged around a sharp turn, and continued. Tight, sweet, just ticking along we were, like nobody could ever touch us. I wasn't gonna let 'em. Yakuza, I guess, they still wanted Johnny's ass, 'cause I'd killed their man, 'cause Johnny'd burned 'em. And the yak, they can afford to move so fucking slow, man. They'll wait years and years, give you a whole life just so you'll have more to lose when they come and take it away. Patient like a spider. Zen spiders. I didn't know that then, or if I did, I figured it didn't apply to us. Like when you're young, you figure you're unique. I was young. It came when we were thinking we maybe had enough to be able to quit, pack it in, go to Europe maybe. Not that either of us knew what we'd do there with nothing to do, but we were living fat, Swiss orbital accounts and a crib full of toys and furniture takes the edge off your game. So that first one they'd sent, he'd been hot. Reflexes like you never saw, implants, enough style for 10 ordinary hoods. But the second one, he was, I don't know, like a monk, cloned, stone killer from the cells up, had it in him, death, the silence, he gave it off in a cloud. Her voice trailed off as the corridors split, identical stairwells descending. She took the left. The corridor widened. The sea of rich carpets undulated gently beneath an enormous candelabrum whose lowest crystal pendant reached nearly to the floor. Crystal tinkled as Molly entered the hall. Third door left, blinked the readout. She turned left, avoiding the inverted tree of crystal. I just saw him once on my way into our place. He was coming out. We lived in a converted factory space, lots of young comers from SenseNet like that. Pretty good security to start with. And I'd put in some really heavy stuff to make it really tight. I knew Johnny was up there, but this little guy, he caught my eye as he was coming out. Didn't say a word. We just looked at each other, and I knew. Plain little guy, plain clothes, no pride in him, humble. He looked at me and got into a pedicab. I knew. Went upstairs, and Johnny was sitting in a chair by the window, with his mouth open a little, like he'd just thought of something to say. The door in front of her was old, a carved slab of Thai teak that seemed to have been sawn in half to fit the low doorway. A primitive mechanical lock with a stainless face had been inset beneath a swirling dragon. She knelt, drew a tight little roll of black chamois from an inside pocket, and selected a needle-thin pick. Never much found anybody I gave a damn about after that. She inserted the pick and worked in silence, nibbling at her lower lip. Case listened to the silence of the hall, punctuated by the soft clink of the candelabrum. Candles? Straylight was all wrong. He remembered Kath's story of a castle with pools and lilies, and Three Jane's mannered words recited musically by the head, a place grown in upon itself. Where were the Tessier Ash pools? She closed her eyes, and there was a click that Case felt rather than heard. It made him remember the magnetic locks on the door of her cubicle in the puppet place. The door had opened for him, even though he'd had the wrong chip. That was Wintermute, manipulating the lock the way it had manipulated the drone micro and the robot gardener. The lock system in the puppet place had been a subunit of Freeside's security system. The simple mechanical lock here would pose a real problem for the AI, requiring either a drone of some kind or a human agent. She opened her eyes, put the pick back into the chamois, carefully re-rolled it, and tucked it back into its pocket. "Guess you're kind of like he was," she said. "Think you're born to run. Figure what you were into back in Sheba, that was a stripped-down version of what you'd have been doing anywhere. Bad luck. It'll do that sometimes. Get you down to basics." She stood, stretched. "You know, I figure the one Tessier Ashpool sent after that Jimmy, the boy who stole the head, he must be pretty much the same as the one the yak sent to kill Johnny." She drew the Fletcher from its holster and dialed the barrel to full auto. The ugliness of the door struck Case as she reached for it. not the door itself, which was beautiful, or had once been part of some more beautiful whole, but the way it had been sawn down to fit a particular entrance. Molly grasped one of the carved dragon's forelegs, and the door swung open easily. The room behind was small, cramped, little more than a closet. Gray steel tool cabinets were backed against a curving wall. Third left, pulsed the optic chip, Wintermute overriding her time display. Five down. She found the key. It was like a dull brass coin with a short hollow tube brazed against one edge. She turned it slowly in her hand, and Case saw that the interior of the tube was lined with studs and flanges. The letters Chubb were molded across one face of the coin. The other was blank. "He told me," she whispered, "Wintermute, how he played a waiting game for years. Didn't have any real power then, but he could use the villa's security and custodial systems to keep track of where everything was. He saw somebody lose this key 20 years ago, and he managed to get somebody else to leave it here. Then he killed him, the boy who'd brought it here. Kid was 8. She closed her white fingers over the key, so nobody would find it. She took a length of black nylon cord from the suit's kangaroo pocket and threaded it through the round hole above. Knotting it, she hung it around her neck. They were always fucking him over with how old-fashioned they were, he said, all their 19th-century stuff. He looked just like the Finn on the screen in that meat puppet hole. Almost thought he was the Finn if I wasn't careful. He said if they had turned into what they'd wanted to, he could have gotten out a long time ago. But they didn't. Screwed up. Freaks like 3 Jane. That's what he called her, but he talked like he liked her. She turned, opened the door, and stepped out, her hand brushing the checkered grip of the holstered Fletcher. Case flipped. Quangrade Mark 11 was growing. "Dixie, you think this thing'll work?" "Does a bear shit in the woods?" The flatline punched them up through shifting rainbow strata. Something dark was forming at the core of the Chinese program. If he looked directly at that null point, no outline would form. It took a dozen quick peripheral takes before he had it, a shark thing, gleaming like obsidian, the black mirrors of its flanks reflecting faint distant lights that bore no relationship to the matrix around it. "That's the sting," the construct said. "When Quang's good and belly tight with the Tessier Ashpool core, we're riding that through." "You were right, Dix. There's some kind of manual override on the hardwiring that keeps Wintermute under control. However much he is under control," he added. "He," the construct said.
"He, watch that. It. I keep telling you."
"It's a code," Case said. "A word," he said. "Somebody has to speak it into a fancy terminal in a certain room while we take care of whatever's waiting for us behind that ice."
"Well, you got time to kill, kid," the flatline said. "Old Quang's slow but steady."
Case jacked out into Malcolm's stare. "You're dead a while there, Mon." "It happens," Case said. "I'm getting used to it." "You're dealing with a darkness, Mon." "Only game in town," Case said. "Ja love, Case," Malcolm said, and turned back to his radio module. Case stared at the matted dreadlocks, the ropes of muscle around the man's dark arms. He jacked back in and flipped. Molly was trotting along a length of corridor that might have been the one she'd traveled before. The glass-fronted cases were gone now, and Case decided they were moving toward the tip of the spindle. Gravity was growing weaker. Soon she was bounding smoothly over rolling hillocks of carpets, faint twinges in her leg. The corridor narrowed suddenly, curved, split. She turned right and started up a freakishly steep flight of stairs, her leg beginning to ache. She arrived at a triangular landing and stood rubbing her leg. More corridors, narrow, their walls hung with rugs. They branched away in 3 directions. Left. She shrugged. "Let me look round, okay?" Left. "Relax, there's time." She started down the corridor that led off to her right. "Go back. Danger." She hesitated. From the half-open oak door at the far end of the passage came a voice, loud and slurred, like the voice of a drunk. Case thought the language might be French, but it was too indistinct. Molly took a step, another, her hand sliding into the suit to touch the butt of her Fletcher. When she stepped into the neural disruptor's field, her ears rang,
a tiny rising tone that made Case think of the sound of her Fletcher. She pitched forward, her striated muscles slack, and struck the door with her forehead. She twisted and lay on her back, her eyes unfocused, breath gone. "What's this?" said the slurred voice. "Fancy dress." A trembling hand entered the front of her suit and found the Fletcher, tugging it out. "Come visit, child. Now." She got up slowly, her eyes fixed on the muzzle of a black automatic pistol. The man's hand was steady enough now. The gun's barrel seemed to be attached to her throat with a taut, invisible string.